Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome back everybody to Pick a Flick, the podcast where you pick a film and we talk about it. Simple. I'm your host Tony Black and I'm joined again by Mr. Andrew Brooker for our part two examination of the DC Extended Universe. We began with The Dark Knight Rises, we carried on with Man of Steel, and now it's time to pick a flick you've all been waiting for. Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice is a 2016 American superhero film featuring the DC Comics characters Batman and Superman, distributed by Warner Brothers. It is a follow-up to 2013's Man of Steel and the second installment in the DC Extended Universe. The film is again directed by Zack Snyder, with a screenplay written by Chris Terrio and David S. Goyer once again, and stars Ben Affleck as Batman, Henry Cavill again as Superman, Amy Adams, Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor, Diane Lane, Lawrence Fishburne, Jeremy Irons as Alfred, Holly Hunter, and Gal Gadot, I think is how you say her name.
I've got no idea. That's pretty much how I've been saying it. I'm assuming she's not like British, where it'll be Gal Dot. And kind of trying to put an accent on it as much as my sucky South London accent can go into French.
I think I've got as best as I can do out of that there. She, of course, plays Wonder Woman. Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice is the first live-action film to feature both Batman and Superman together, as well as the first theatrical film to feature live-action portrayals of Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Cyborg, and The Flash. In the film, and this is a very basic synopsis, criminal genius Lex Luthor, obsessed with defeating Superman, manipulates Batman into preemptively battling him. It's a very, very, very thin synopsis. There is a hell of a lot more to that story. For now, let's have a little clip of the brand new Batman in intense action.
You're going to go to war. That son of a bitch brought the war to us 2 years ago. Jesus, Alfred, count the dead. Thousands of people. What's next? Millions? He has the power to wipe out the entire human race, and if we believe there's even a 1% chance that he is our enemy, we have to take it as an absolute certainty. And we have to destroy him. But he is not our enemy. Not today.
20 years in Gotham, Alfred. We've seen what promises are worth. How many good guys are left? How many stayed that way?
Yes, I meant intense conversation there, but there you go. It was in June 2013 that Warner Brothers announced that Snyder and Goyer would return for a Man of Steel sequel, and everyone considered in 2015 that the sequel would show itself and it would be a pure sequel to Man of Steel. But then the month after, Snyder confirmed at San Diego Comic-Con that the sequel would be a Superman versus Batman for the first time in cinema, which is, of course, a huge comic book event that people have been, you know, playing around with doing for years. Back in the 90s, Wolfgang Peterson was close to doing it. There was a few scripts flying out there. I think Andrew Kevin Walker, who wrote Seven, did a script years ago for this. And it is online. And so it potentially happened a few years ago, but it didn't. Goyer and Snyder would co-write the story with Goyer writing the script, and Christopher Nolan involved in an advisory role as executive producer. advisory being probably, he was probably told it was happening, and that's it. You can imagine. Snyder, on how Batman came into the film, said, "After Man of Steel finished and we started talking about what would be in the next movie, I started subtly mentioning that it would be cool if you faced Batman. You're in a story meeting talking about, like, who should Superman fight if he fought this giant alien thread Zod, who was basically his equal physically, from his planet fighting on our turf. You know who to fight next, but I'm not going to say all that when I took the job to do Man of Steel, that I did it in a subversive way to get Batman. I really believe that only after contemplating who could face Superman that Batman came into the picture. Could, just picture him saying that in the kind of, yeah, well, I was thinking, yeah, let's do this. That's cool, Batman.
In that 15-year-old hasn't really got much of a vocabulary kind of way.
Exactly, yeah. and so that's basically the genesis of it, you know, that once Man of Steel had come out and they knew that Batman was finished with Nolan, they went, well, let's kick all this off, really. Marvel are creating this DCU, this MCU, as we should say, and it's been hugely successful. You know, let's get a slice of the pie. The big question, obviously, everyone's asking is, we've been waiting three years for this film now. It's probably one of the most anticipated films. In fact, probably the most anticipated film after Star Wars for years. Is it any good? Best response ever.
Well, imagine you're one of those that's been looking forward to this film for 3 years, and then you go and see that. Oh, wow. I really wanted it to be good as well.
Did you think it would be? I mean, did you honestly think it would be?
No, but mainly because of Zack Snyder. Do you remember the rage when it was announced that Ben Affleck would be Batman?
Yes, I do.
Mm. It was insane. The only time I've ever seen anything like that was when Heath Ledger was cast as the Joker.
Yeah.
And I remember the entire world going, well, that'll be shit. And I think I said it as well. Well, that'll be shit. You can't beat Jack Nicholson. And, of course, we're all proven wrong. Mm. But, of course, everybody's going, well, why have you cast Daredevil as Batman? And the people that, you know, not people like you and me that know a little bit or know a lot, you know, I don't know a lot, but, you know, but I know that Ben Affleck had nothing to do with the making of Daredevil. The poor bastard just happened to be in quite a shit superhero movie when everybody was churning out shit superhero movies.
Well, the sad thing about that, though, as an example, is that he's a massive fan of Daredevil. And he's been a fan since he was a kid. And it was kind of his dream superhero to play. So I kind of feel sad for him there, because he said a few years after that that Daredevil had inoculated myself from ever playing another superhero until Batman came along.
Yeah,
and it was a shame, because it wasn't his fault.
I spent a lot of time actually like defending the decision, saying, you know, and I remember saying, you know, Zack Snyder's making this film, it's going to be crap. Please go look at Man of Steel. This film is going to be crap.
Yeah,
but Affleck as Batman is a fantastic idea, and I guarantee you it works, because, you know, the guy doesn't matter. He's not a little actor anymore. He's, you know, he's an Oscar winning director. You know, he knows how to get a good performance. He knows how to give a good performance, and he will be amazing. Turns out he's the best part of this whole film.
Without question. He is totally the reason to watch it, really.
Him and Alfred.
Yes, definitely. It's interesting as well that Chris Terrio was one of the writers, or the writer of Argo, which was a great film that Affleck, of course, directed. And I think he would have been probably principally responsible for Chris Terrio coming on and doing a script polish. And he's been involved in Justice League Part 1, although curiously he's not involved in Part 2, which makes me think he's fucking sick of Zack Snyder by now.
Ain't we all?
Well, and David S. Goyer, who is pretty much a hack. I mean, you know, anything good that he's got his name on, he's not because of him, really. You only have to look at the Dark Knight trilogy. It's Jonathan Nolan and Christopher Nolan who are the ones I would put money on who made those films good in terms of writing. It's not Goya.
No, and, well, I done a little bit of... I was writing an article today, actually, talking about, like, comic book TV. And one of the things I brought up was, do you remember the Blade TV show?
Yes, I do.
All on his own, mate. That was David Goyer. And it was fucking ghastly.
Shit, yeah.
I mean, I know he had a hand in writing the films as well, but you also had, you know, people like Guillermo del Toro making the films.
Right.
So you're exactly. Okay with people like that. But yeah, all on his top, mate, he makes some awful, awful stuff. How that dude is still working, I do not know.
Well, because he all his films make money. And the films he's associated with make money. Man of Steel, he wrote with Snyder. And that says everything. That says it all, really.
Yeah.
I would argue that this film is slightly better written than Man of Steel. And it's probably because of Chris Terrio. Not by much, admittedly. But, you know, a little bit. But no, going back to Affleck, he is the best thing in it. And I would go as far as to say that he's possibly, potentially, in its early days, but he's possibly the best Bruce Wayne. Or he could be the best Bruce Wayne. Because like we talked about earlier with the comparison to The Dark Knight Rises, it's really interesting to come into a Batman where he's done everything. You know, he's fought all the villains before, and, you know, he's presumably lost Robin, because there's a suggestion that Robin's been killed by the Joker in this. So there's a lot that's happened. He's been doing it, as Alfred says at one point, he's been doing it for 20 years. He's fought everybody. In theory, he's fought the Riddler, he's fought the Penguin, he's fought Catwoman, all these people. They're all in his past, and they could crop up again, presumably, because they're probably all still alive. But, or they're probably on Arkham Asylum or something, and he's got to a point where he's got nothing else to really fight for anymore. And that's when Superman turns up, and you get the... You know, it's interesting, they open the film with Ben Affleck, and they open the film with Bruce in Metropolis, and it's very 9/11, isn't it?
It's a really well-made action scene, though.
It is pretty good, yeah.
Him getting to the bit in Metropolis, I mean, it's like you could call it Ground Zero.
Yeah, yeah.
Him getting to that part of Metropolis in his little motor is a really, really good action scene.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a tiny little chase scene for the first couple of minutes of the film, and it's really well done.
Yeah, there are some decently staged moments in this, you know, and that's why... You know, I'll go out there straight away and say it's a better film than Man of Steel. Not by much, but it's a better film. And, you know, Affleck has got a lot to do with that, because immediately he's a very maudlin, tortured Bruce Wayne in a different way we've seen them before. You know, Michael Keaton was very urbane as Bruce Wayne. He was very urbane and relaxed and, you know, a bit tortured, but it never really came across. Christian Bale was just angry. You know, he would flip from being the loose playboy to being just a very angry, broken Bruce. This guy is just fucking fed up of it all. And he's just at the point now where he could quite easily probably just give it up at this point. And then he finds a reason to carry on. And ultimately, you know, it's a flawed reason in that he sees the wrong guy as the villain at first.
Yeah.
But it's a great character story for Batman in this and for Bruce Wayne. And that's what carries the film through for me.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that the first scene in the film is Bruce Wayne, and it's him going through the chaos of Metropolis while the end of Man of Steel is happening. But I think what's interesting is because obviously he's set up as the hero, he gets the guy out from under the rubble and he saves a little girl. But it's not Batman that does the saving, it's Bruce Wayne that does the saving.
Yeah.
And I think it's an interesting direction to take that character. You know, he doesn't have or need his mask for that. He just knows he needs to do it.
Well, it's very much about it's not the film isn't really about Batman, is it?
No.
It's about Bruce Wayne, and it's about his character, and the suit is just what he puts on to fight, you know. And that's really interesting, and in that Affleck gets a lot to do as Bruce Wayne, and he gets to play that character. You know, he gets a very brief moment where he's playing the Bruce who is the cocky, entitled shit. You know, mainly in the scene where he's talking to Clark Kent, and they're both, you know, and then Luther's coming in and being Luther and all that stuff. But mostly he's the angry, the guy who thinks that he's the guy who's got to stop the bad guy, you know, and that no one else is going to do it. And then you've got the great interplay between him and Jeremy Irons, who's terrific. He's really droll and, you know, and dry. He's fairly well written, Alfred, but Irons just makes it better, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think he's actually been really, really well cast. Because to be honest, when they said Jeremy Irons was going to be in it, I was annoyed he wasn't going to be Lex Luthor.
that would have been good.
But, you know, Jeremy Irons as Alfred, I think it's inspired. And they do this really cool thing, because I didn't realise actually until I watched Gotham, the TV show, that Alfred was ex-army or ex-special forces.
Yeah.
And it's not mentioned at all in this film, but what you do see if you're looking for it or you notice it is he's wearing a lot of old school kind of army sweaters.
Yeah.
And you go, oh yeah. And if you don't know, it doesn't mean anything. If you don't notice it, you're not missing out on a single thing. But when you spot it and you know why it's there, you're like, oh, yeah. And because he's, you know, he's more than just the butler in this one, isn't he? He's the Lucius Fox of this.
Yes, he is, yeah.
He's Batman's weapons maker as well.
He's his Q, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And he is amazing in it.
He's great. Those two steal the film. Those two are the best thing in the film. I could have happily... I mean, it's why I'm really looking forward to The Batman now, the actual film that's presumably... that rumours is that Ben Affleck's going to direct as well. And I'm really up for that now, because I think put these two together, they work really well off each other, and they're a great pairing. You know, they could end up being my favourite, actually.
Yeah, and he's like I said earlier, he's a spectacular Oscar-winning director.
Yeah,
you know, the guy knows how to make a good film.
He does.
And, you know, I would be really excited for it. I would be interested to see how it plays out. Like, because obviously I mentioned earlier that we get Suicide Squad, and we know there's him versus the Joker, and at least part of that.
Mm.
So obviously we can't know anything about Batman the film until that's played out, and we know where in the timeline that happens.
Because you can bet your bottom dollar that Jared Leto's Joker will be the villain in the Batman. I would put hard cash on that.
Absolutely, but I think it will probably. I reckon it will be set before Suicide Squad.
Possibly. Mm. It'd be interesting how they do it, but. I think that's pretty much the whole highlight of this film, those two. Everything else, I just felt like Zack Snyder had not learned any lessons from Man of Steel. And even though this was more interesting in the sense that there's stuff going on, at the same time, there isn't anything going on. You know, the plot is a mess because it doesn't go anywhere for a long time. There's so much dithering. Interestingly enough, I came out the cinema and I said to my friend Matt Latham, who I went to see it with, I said, I saw lots of little kids, and I said to him, I bet a lot of those kids were bored.
Yeah.
Because for a lot of this film, there's nothing going on. There's just a lot of conversations in rooms.
It took an hour and 40 minutes for the Versus bit of Batman versus Superman to appear.
Yeah.
An hour and 40 minutes. That's a whole film before I get to the actual part of the film I wanted to see.
Yeah, the point of the film. Yeah, exactly. You know, and you think to yourself, well, what's it all been? It's mainly all been, again, putting all the pieces together that form the DCU. It's not about this film. This film is about the next bunch of films. You know, and that's it's a problem that Age of Ultron had. You know, and it's the same kind of issue.
It's got that point. Age of Ultron had it, and Amazing Spider-Man 2 had it as well.
Yeah,
that kind of. Yeah. It wasn't a film. It was a giant PowerPoint presentation to explain to you how the next seven films were going to happen.
Exactly. You know, and I, much as I like all the Marvel stuff, majority of the Marvel stuff, I'm the first person to turn around and say Age of Ultron was really misconceived because it did too much. And this is the same problem. This does too much. And it's just... I don't have an issue with the DCU at all, right? I think in theory it could be fine. You know, I mean, I've always thought that the DC Comics universe has much, much more interesting characters than the Marvel universe. But the difference is, Marvel have done this the right way, and you know, I understand why the DCU are doing it differently, and that they're basically throwing everyone into the pot at once and then going to ripple them all out over successive years. I get that they're doing it in the flip side, but there's a reason that Marvel didn't do that. Because it's better storytelling to actually build people up to an event instead of having a massive event. And then, to be fair, you've only got, I think it's one or two films before the next big event. It's only Suicide Squad and Wonder Woman. And then you've got Justice League, which is going to be huge. And you think to yourself, well, where's the build-up here?
You have to remember there as well, Suicide Squad probably isn't canon to most of this. It's a completely different story to everything else.
Right, well, there you go. Again. So the only probably canon thing will be Wonder Woman, and half of that, by the sound of it, is set in the past.
Yeah, it's going to be an origin film, isn't it?
Yeah. So, you know, you're pretty much going to... And, you know, we're going to spoil things here, okay? So a warning. But presumably, the entire beginning of Justice League will be Superman's resurrection, you know, for whatever it is. You know, because obviously he's going to come back from the dead. But, you know, that's probably not going to happen till Justice League now, which will be the next technical sequel. So you think to yourself, well, immediately it's all rah, massive stuff. And it doesn't feel like you've got any time to breathe. And this film, I just kept thinking, there's so much here, but there's nothing to it. There's nothing connecting any of it up. There's nothing that I care about. You know, again, Superman is just a miserable fucker all the way through, right? He's just really dour. And Henry Cavill does not look like he's having fun at all.
No.
You know, he spends most of the film as Superman for a start, so he doesn't get any real chance to shine as Clark Kent. And he doesn't say much for a lot of it. He just stares into the middle distance, so he'll just be listening to people like Martha Kent giving him some advice or, you know, and you think to yourself, well, what? Why should I care about the battle, ultimately? And I didn't. Because it's so contrived as well.
Yeah, it just, the whole get into the verses bit just seemed, okay, it was forced. It had to be forced because there was no reason for it.
Yeah.
You know, well, okay, well, you've got Batman and you've got angry Batman, and Batman is focusing his anger on Superman because he thinks he's the bad guy. That's fine. But Superman doesn't think Batman's the bad guy. Mm. He thinks he's an arsehole because he's branding people. You know, but this, you know, this is what we said before. This is old, I've had enough of this Batman. So yeah, he's branding people before he puts them away, and that is a bit hardcore, but okay. But there's no reason for the versus part of this film at all. There's no, outside of because we need to get them in the same room together to fight Doomsday, there's no point to it at all. And I didn't think I could be bored. You know, two superheroes beating the snot out of each other, I shouldn't be bored. And there was me falling asleep.
I was there going, you know, there were components of it I liked. I did like the fact that Batman managed to construct a suit that meant it was a fair fight for some of it. You know, I mean, they did manage to smack down, and, you know, because in theory it was a one-way fight completely.
Yeah.
And at the start it begins that way. Superman's just smacking him around and all this, and then Batman's suit kicks in properly, and you can have a proper fight. And you know that was good in the sense, but
it's cool that they actually managed to do it properly. Because to be honest, every advert, every trailer I've seen for this has made me look at it and go, "This is going to be shit."
The trailers
did not look good.
They were horrendous. And, I mean,
even, you know, because it didn't look like Batman; it looked like Iron Man in a black suit.
Yeah,
it's going to be ghastly.
It was, yeah, I know. And, you know, so they did it as effectively as they probably could have done. But it's, the point is that there's no emotion to it. I mean, and the whole thing is, I mean, Superman, to his credit, does at least try and talk to him before it happens. Yeah. But the whole thing could have been avoided with a simple conversation or more conversation between them in advance, you know. And it's that whole thing of, I mean, Lex Luthor, I mean, I didn't think it was possible to get Lex Luthor worse on screen, because much as Gene Hackman is a great actor, his Lex Luthor was dodgy. Kevin Spacey's Luthor, and Kevin Spacey's a great actor, but his Lex Luthor was a bit dodgy. This guy, I mean,
both of them look award-winning compared to Jesse Eisenberg, didn't they?
He was bloody awful. And, you know, I quite like Jesse Eisenberg as an actor, but God, they just so fouled up Luther, because he's just so grating all the way through. And again, his plan, again, makes very little sense. You know, he basically just puts his plan together as it happens. I'm inside the ship. Oh, okay. I've got Zod. Oh, all right. I'm like, well, let's resurrect him then. Let's see what happens. And he's, you know, he's just like, okay, all right. And the whole thing is just so... And then as well, you've got script writing and plotting that is just the kind of thing that if you went to a script writing seminar or you studied script writing, you would be told is really bad script writing, which is the whole thing of putting in all these sequences that are about, as we said earlier, are about the future films. The big one being the massive dream / future / alternate reality, whatever it is, sequence where Batman's in the desert, the apocalypse.
The Terminator sequence.
The Terminator sequence. And I was sitting there thinking, well, where's this? What's happening here? You know, I didn't fully understand any of it until I read several articles today that have basically explained all the stuff. You know, and if you go and seek them out, there's a lot of stuff that you need to know the comics quite well, but there's a lot of stuff they've put in those sequences. And the one afterwards, which is the Flash appearing to him from the future. And I didn't even know who that was. I was like, who is that? You know, I had no idea.
I, I made an educated guess after having watched the TV show.
Oh, there you go.
but that's it. I mean, I think that's a big problem with this film. And if you take the Marvel Cinematic Universe as an example, every film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe has nods to the comic books.
Yeah.
And has nods. But a bit like the thing I said earlier with Jeremy Irons and his army jumper, if I don't notice it, if I don't get it, it's not going to ruin my film. It's not going to ruin my experience of the film. This, I sat there going, this is 10 minutes of just... And it reminded me of the Terminator dream sequence in Terminator 1.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there going, why is this happening? I don't understand a fucking thing that is going on the screen.
Yeah.
And when it turns out that actually you're only really going to understand it if you know the comic books, that shouldn't be happening.
No, it shouldn't.
You can't do that to a film that you're selling to everybody.
Yeah. I mean, it baffles me why that wasn't a post-credit sequence. I mean, that would have been a perfect post-credit sequence, wouldn't it, really? You know, you've got, you cut to Batman there, big smackdown, big fight, he wakes up, the Flash appears, oh, look, Lois Lane, blah, 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 too soon, but gone. And then Bruce Wayne's just there going, fuck. Perfect. Yeah. That would have been a great post-credit sequence. Why is it in the middle of the film? You know, there's been some arguments about how, oh, you know, the whole idea is that it's making the point that the Flash appears too soon because he appears before all this stuff has happened. And, you know, the whole inference is when he says, you were right about him, you know, fear him. He's talking about Superman when he's not talking about Superman at all. You know, the Flash is talking about whatever's coming, you know, that Luther talks about. So it's the point of it being there is because it's trying to emphasize the whole idea that Superman's bad. But we know he's not bad. And the whole idea is that they try and get across in this film, that's why Holly Hunter's in it mainly, is the whole idea that Superman may be seen as a godlike figure to some, but can we trust a man who has ultimate power if he doesn't hold by the law? And, you know, that's not a bad moral idea. It's not a bad quandary to put into a superhero film, you know, especially in this day and age where people are terrified of powers they don't understand and, you know, alien immigrants and, you know, in all this stuff. You know, I understand it. I understand it from a contemporary point of view.
You mean like the completely pointless and for no reason other than it's pulled straight out of the newspaper scene in the Middle East at the beginning of the damn film?
Well, yes, exactly. Yeah. And this is the thing. It's, I understand why these things are there. The problem, I mean, but then, you know, then Snyder again undoes it because of explosions. That whole sequence where Capitol Hill blows up, how the fucking hell is that likely to happen? How on earth would that guy have got a bomb in that building? It's just like, I was just sitting there thinking, this is one of those twists that's meant to crank things up. I was just thinking, it wouldn't happen. It wouldn't happen.
I don't know what it was like at the where you went to see it, but my local Cineworld, when I was sitting watching it, did you have everybody sitting there pissing themselves laughing at the jar of piss?
No, I think everybody was just...
Everybody behind me is in stitches. I'm looking at this going, is this really funny? Am I really missing a joke? It's a jar of piss.
It's a jar of piss. But again, it's a film that takes itself seriously at all the wrong points, right? You know, and it's so sort of po-faced and, you know, earnest about everything. In that you just want someone to point out, this is all a bit daft. You know, this is all just a little bit stupid. And the way it's being put across is all a little bit stupid. And by the time you get to a climactic battle, I mean, the other thing is, the climactic battle isn't even Batman versus Superman. That's just the setup, right? That's just what needs to happen in order to get to Doomsday, which was just half an hour of the most boring, just boring stuff I've seen in a long time. And the other thing was, as well, which I didn't like, it just makes Batman look really shit. Because
many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
He can't do anything, can he? Really?
No.
He can't do much.
They've put him in a movie with two immortals.
Yeah.
And they make him look like the weak link. And yeah, I think that's really sad in a film that, I'm sorry, Batman's your best character so far.
Yeah, I mean,
and that ain't taking anything away from Wonder Woman. I thought she was awesome. I thought she was wasted, and it would have been much better if they hadn't revealed who she was in the trailer.
Well, yeah,
it would have been a much bigger surprise when suddenly that photo turns up. And, oh, fucking hell!
That's true. If we didn't know that she was playing, well, that's absolutely a good point. Yeah, and it would. I think I would have given more of a shit about her as well if we'd have had that movie first. You know, if we'd have had her origin story like earlier this year or last year, and that we know who she is.
She just happens to be there.
Yeah.
And I don't buy it at all.
I've said I'm not particularly keen on her, but I will reserve judgment on Wonder Woman because I think the film will be quite good. I've got some good vibes about that actually. So I think I will wait until next year to I'll reserve judgment. But in this, yeah, she just doesn't do much for most of it. She has the terribly sort of crowbarred in way of us seeing the future Justice League, you know, on the computer. And then she turns up luckily for the final battle.
That computer thing, mate, I've never felt so ripped off at a film. All this talk of these, you know, because we all know, and I can never remember his bloody name, he's Khal Drogo from Game of Thrones.
Aquaman. Jason Momoa. But
that's the guy. Thank you.
Yeah.
I think he's great, and I think he's a really cool actor, and so long as he doesn't do stupid things like bullet to the head, I think he'll be fine. But all this hype about all these guys that they're going to put into Bats versus Soup so they can kick off the Justice League, and three of them are reserved for YouTube videos.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
That really, and to be honest, I think there's a point that they wasted an opportunity. We could have had Aquaman appear quite legitimately at the end of the film.
Yeah.
Chasing after that spear.
Yeah.
I think we should have had Aquaman there. Okay, we get the Flash in the little flashback thing. But yeah, I just thought, you've told me that these people are going to be in this film, and actually what you've done is you've given us a bunch of video links to, you know, just clips of these people. This is not introducing characters. This isn't how you introduce characters.
No, it's not. And it's just the whole... It's just bad script writing. It's bad storytelling. It's amateurish storytelling. And it's fan-baiting Snyder going, oh, let's put these guys in here, yeah, because everyone's going to love this. You know, it's like... And I'm sitting here thinking, I've paid to see this film, right? I haven't paid to see all the others yet, right? Give me this film. Make me give a shit. Make me want to see all the rest. And as it stands, the only one I do want to see is the Batman, because I'm genuinely interested to see where this Bruce Wayne goes and explore him, right? And not just because Batman's my favourite character. And he's my favourite comic book character. I will hold my hand up and say that. He totally is. He always has been. But I feel...
There are worse people to have as your favourite.
Well, yeah, exactly. But I like you, I was very dubious about Affleck because I go hot and cold on that guy, and I was not sure this was going to work at all, and he thoroughly, thoroughly surprised me in a positive way, and I'm delighted about that, and it's great, and I'm really, really excited about him. The rest, I couldn't give a shit about. And I'm at the point by the end of this film, I'm thinking, you learnt nothing from the last one, this has got no depth again, the whole thing is just... You know, it's now being defended by a legion of comic book fans and a legion of people who are saying, oh, ignore the critics, they don't know what they're talking about. No, they do know what they're talking about, because the reason that everyone's saying the same thing is because it's not good filmmaking. And ultimately, that's what we're watching. We're not watching a comic book. We're watching a movie. We're watching a film where we're supposed to care about these characters, so we keep watching again. Not an extended, like you said, an extended... What was it you said? An extended
PowerPoint
presentation for the next 10 films. Marvel don't do that. Marvel manage to tell individual stories. They don't always get it right. I'm not saying they do. They totally do fuck up sometimes.
But the one time Marvel have tried it, that we got Age of Ultron, and I think they learned pretty quick that they fucked up.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think Joss Whedon knew as he was making that film that he was fucking up. But he was too far down the line, really. And I think there'll be some really, really candid interviews with Joss Whedon in the future years where he explains exactly what was the problems. Yeah. He's already hinted at stuff. But yeah, I think lessons will be learned, and I hope they will be, you know, especially for Infinity War. But
yeah,
it's just 9 times out of 10, they manage to layer in all this extra stuff and to construct the bigger story without sacrificing telling this story. And this film doesn't do that. And that's my biggest problem. And it ends with just this enormous climactic load of guff. And I'm left at the end with a moment that should absolutely sucker punch me, pardon the pun, but it doesn't, and I'm just there thinking, well, I've not cared about this Superman yet at all in 2 films, so I'm not particularly fussed, if I'm honest.
The problem now is not only do I not care about Superman, I'm very close to not caring about the DC Universe at all.
Yeah.
And that's a real problem, because I said in like December, my most anticipated film for 2016 is Suicide Squad.
Yeah, you did. I remember that, yeah.
No, I'm not... Not because it's DC. I love the guys in it. I love the idea of an anti-hero movie, and I love the guy that's making it. But if we're going to get another 2.5 hours of dog shit like we've just watched, please don't do that to me. Yeah. Please.
I know. And that's exactly the problem. I really do genuinely hate to be so down on this stuff, because I love comic book movies, I really do, and I think it's a great medium, and I'm happy that we're at a stage where all these films do get made, you know, and I hate to be this negative, and you know, a lot of people who know me and have listened to me lately will say you didn't want to like it, and you know what, I didn't know. I went into there with a point that it was already pissing me off for many reasons. But I was hoping that I would come out of the film and go, do you know what? That was all right, actually. That wasn't bad. And in fact, I came out going, apart from one or two things, that was just as pointless an exercise, a very expensive exercise.
Yeah. That's the thing, though, isn't it? I go into film sometimes going, oh, this is going to be shit. And I'm quite happy to hold my hands up, whether I'm just talking to mates or I'm writing a review, I'm quite happy to hold my hands up and go, okay, I thought it was going to be crap. It was actually really good.
Yeah.
You know, I was wrong. I'm very sorry. Yeah, but here I'm like, I fucking knew it.
Yeah, exactly.
And exactly. I don't want to be down on the film. I don't do it for a living, but I love writing stuff for films. Mm. I don't want to write shit. I don't want to write that your film's guff.
Yeah.
You know, I write for film stuff because I really enjoy it.
Yeah,
you know, I really enjoy watching films. Why would I want to write that your film was shit?
Exactly. Nobody wants to do that. And it's just a shame. It just really is a shame. And it's, you know, I really want to get more excited about it all. I just want to come to this. I want to be able to get to a point that I'm looking forward to Justice League, and I'm looking forward to Wonder Woman, and I'm looking forward to The Flash, and all that. And I'm not, and I want, and the problem is that the guy making it is the reason, you know. Yep. The other films are going to farm out to different people, you know. Patty Jenkins is doing Wonder Woman after several attempts to make like comic book films. Like, she was on for Thor 2 for a while, and to be fair, she has the last laugh there, because Thor 2.
Yeah, she got away light with that one.
She did, right. But they should have stuck with her and listened to what she was saying, because I imagine she had a better vision than what actually happened. Yeah. So, you know, that could turn out to be quite good. It's got a good cast, Wonder Woman. It's got people like Robin Wright in it, you know, and these guys. You know, it's good people involved. You know, like this film, there's some terrific supporting actors. You know, people like Irons, Lawrence Fishburne, who was great, actually, all through it. You know, in the scenes he did get, he's always good. You know, I like his Perry White. You know, you've got some good supporting actors, some proper actors, propping up all the other people.
I think one of the biggest problems with this DCU is that Warner have come into this far too late and gone, we need to copy the MCU. We need to get this big. And this is what we have. We have a list of the next 12 films coming out over the next 5 years.
But what they're doing is they're doing it all at once. You know,
but this is the problem. They're shoehorning everything in, and they're not taking their time, and they're going to ruin it for themselves and for us doing that.
They are. And, you know, I mean, we say all this, but in 3 or 4 days, it's made 450 million nearly worldwide.
Fucking hell.
You know, I mean, so we're saying all this, but it doesn't change the fact that even though most of the critics, it's got 30% on Rotten Tomatoes, most of the critics are saying it's shit or average at best.
Yeah.
People are just going in their droves. And
it's Batman versus Superman, and it was going to be a money spinner no matter what.
It will probably be the first film this year to make the billion, you know, and I think it will make more than Civil War, to tell you the truth. You know, I really do, because in hindsight, I would have put Civil War out a couple of months later, actually, just to give a bit of breathing room, right? Because it's coming out very quickly. And I know it's got a built-in fan base, but
the problem is it's got a built-in fan base that are getting a little bit sick of it.
Well, yeah.
You know?
which is why, I mean, I kind of think that maybe the reason Deadpool has made 800 million is because of you. But
I think I'm responsible for half for the
box office. But the reason that's made 800 million is because people are loving the fact that it's a two-fingered reaction going, fuck all this bollocks, let's just have a bit of fun with it all. You know,
the other problem that Deadpool has actually caused, have you noticed this? Since Deadpool came out, there's been talk over and over again of, we've got to make an R-rated comic book film.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Batman vs Superman, when it comes out on Blu-ray, will be an R-rated director's cut.
Fuck off.
It doesn't fucking need it. Just because one 18-rated or 15-rated film makes a three-quarters of a billion pound does not mean that every R-rated comic book film... Look at Punisher Warzone, for Christ's sake. It barely broke its budget.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty hard 18 rating, that film.
Exactly. The reason that Deadpool was successful was because it was brilliantly marketed. It had a good star who was talking it up and who people like, who's in vogue. It had a built-in fan base who had been wanting it for years, and it came at just the right point where it was cashing in on the malaise about traditional superhero films. It was like, I've said this before, Deadpool is lightning in a bottle. It won't be repeated. It can't be repeated. And this is where they will fall foul. And these films, unless they have heavyweight guys like Batman and Superman, they will not... I mean, Spider-Man will make a ton of money next year because it's Spider-Man, you know, and because it's new and fresh. But, you know, they will still make money. But the problem is, are people really going to go and see The Flash and Aquaman, you know, in the same way? I don't think they are, really.
No. Because... I don't think they are, but I think the problem is because it doesn't matter how bad we say, it doesn't matter how bad critics say Batman vs Superman is. And okay, there might be this massive part of the fan base that thought it was a great film. That's fine. But the fact is, it's actually, okay, in my opinion, it's a very poor film.
Mm-hmm.
But it's made 450 million in 2 days.
Yeah.
What doesn't matter what critics say, all Warner see is a success. More of this, please.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We're in for a rough couple of years, mate, I tell you.
Yeah, definitely with Zack Snyder at the helm, without question. And this
he needs to fuck off.
But, you know...
Him and Michael Bay on a boat into the ocean. Just leave the rest of us be.
Yeah. Just go off and make films on an island with all your, you know... Just get a load of robots that will do exactly what they want. Just let them make films. It's the whole thing of... You know, Snyder has positioned himself now effectively as the Kevin Feige, in a way, of the DCU. You know, at the very least, the Joss Whedon, who had the creative control over the films around the Avengers films, even though I know he's gone now. But he's more like the Feige. He's more like the guy who, because he's making them all this money, he will be the guy who goes, oh, let's do all this, let's do all this. And, you know,
that's the real problem, because he's going to have his fingers in every single DCU pie, and we don't want that.
No, because he can't. Because he's a visual stylist, and I appreciate what he does. I mean, there are moments in this film where he's nicely shot. You know, at times I will concede that, right? But he's purely visual. He has no depth, no substance. And these films deserve that, and they can have it because they are modern mythology.
If you want to keep me interested for more than just one film, you need to have a bit of depth.
Yeah. And, you know, Marvel, for all their colour and gaudiness, they have that. Most of them have some depth. Whether it's levity, whether it's fun like Guardians, whether it's, you know, very sort of more, much more serious stuff or more, much more, you know, epic stuff, it at least has those elements, you know, 9 times out of 10. And DC is a darker universe really anyway. So I understand why that you would go in perhaps a slightly darker direction, but it doesn't have to be so relentless in terms of how dour and forced it all is. And
does Aquaman really need to be dark?
Exactly. And it will be. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the Flash TV series, and I've seen a bit of the Flash TV series, it's like, it's really silly and daft and colourful. You know, can you really imagine these people making that kind of film?
No, but the thing with the Flash TV series, it works well because it's basically a procedural cop show.
Yeah.
With a super a superhero at the helm,
yeah,
you know, and that, it works like that. I quite like the Flash TV show.
So do I.
I've got no issues with it at all. And I quite like, well, half now. I like half of the DC TV shows.
Mm.
I'm not a big fan of Supergirl or Legends of Tomorrow, but Flash and Arrow, I think, and Arrow's quiet. You know, some of it is quite violent, and really good, and that's the kind of level of violence I want out of Batman and Batman Superman. You know, the violence is there. It's not necessarily dark. What it is comic book.
Yeah,
that's exactly. All I'm after.
Exactly, and that goes to the nub of it, really. So it's just really, really disappointing. And there have been some interesting conversations happening on social media about this, and there's been some feedback, you know, over the last few days we've put out, and we'll just look into a little bit of this before we go, and get a few reactions from certain people who've talked on Twitter. You know, we've asked various questions. What did you think? Was it any good? Etc. On Twitter, World of Blackout, at World of Blackout, said, in inverted commas, troubled, certainly. I enjoyed it despite its laundry list of faults, which is a decent way of putting it.
He's a good reviewer, actually. His stuff's definitely worth reading if you follow him. I read all of his reviews. He's a good, funny guy.
Ah, cool. Maybe I'll have to try and get him on the podcast. Consider this an invitation, World of Blackout, if you ever want to come on. Our mate Stacey Taylor at Stacey's Parlour said, it has some major plus points, Affleck and Godot being two of them, and I think I'm in the minority about Wonder Woman, actually, in fairness. But he's overall incoherent and messy. Luther is awful, awful in capitals.
Yeah. And it's a pretty uniform answer about Lex Luthor, though, isn't it? He is just fucking terrible.
Yeah.
Whether or not it's... I mean, I'm not Jesse Eisenberg's biggest fan, really, but whether or not it was Jesse Eisenberg written like that, I think he was fucking ghastly.
He was terrible. He was piss poor. She said he's like a pantomime villainy Joker substitute.
Yeah.
His motivations are sloppily executed and he's very overacted. I think she's spot on there, actually. Matt Latham, our friend Matt Latham at ZanMatt, said, better than The Quest for Peace.
Well.
or as he calls it, The Quest for Peas, which is the name of our very first episode, actually. Big flick. But as I said to him yesterday, you know, that's not hard, is it, really? Because that film's terrible. I think the winner on Twitter, though, is you. For the picture of a very hairy ball sack, which you just... A very long, very hairy ball sack.
It was only because I couldn't find a Good Morning Vietnam gif. You ever seen Good Morning Vietnam?
Yeah.
He says he sucks the sweat from a dead man's balls. Pretty much my go-to reaction for stuff that's shit, and I couldn't find a gif for it, so you just got
just
balls.
The most vivid balls picture though you could possibly find, and with the longest ball sack I think I've ever seen.
Just picture this, right? I do things like that on Twitter quite a lot, and I tend to do them from my iPad or my iPhone. All these images are saved in my poor iCloud photos folder. And no matter how hard I try, I can't get rid of them all. They keep reappearing.
Brilliant.
So it's worth it for the funny factor, but if my wife ever goes through my iPhotos, she's going to wonder what the fucking hell I'm up to.
Please do that, Mrs. Brooker. It will be worth it. On Twitter as well, we've had some interesting feedback. Our friend Leslie Byron Pitt just said, uninspired, one word about the film. Whether he enjoyed it or not, I think, you know, I imagine, I knew Les wouldn't particularly enjoy it. because he's got taste, really. No offense to people who did like it. And one person who did like it is Kyle West, and he's a big advocate of it. And he to be fair, he's come up with some really, really good good arguments coming back about it, really. We had a good conversation on Facebook about it, and you know, he makes some really good points. He read my review, which you can find on the Black Hole Cinema blog at www.blackholepodcast.com, which is our website.
He said, good review, right?
Thank you very much. But he said so much that I disagree with in there, although I anticipated every one of your complaints, all except Wonder Woman. I didn't see your hate coming there. He said that, I'll concede you one point, the metahuman stuff didn't need to be here. I was fine with Flash showing up in the dream sequence, flash forward, although the costume he was wearing there probably meant no one other than fans would have known it was actually the Flash, which I think he's absolutely right about, because I didn't. The files that Wonder Woman watches during the final fight, though, absolutely unnecessary here, and could have waited until Justice League, considering that film will sell on the DC's Trinity involvement anyway. You're right, doing Justice League before we've had the Flash, Aquaman and Cyborg movies isn't right, but now I've seen Batman vs. Superman, I can see how they'll make it work. He says, I can't buy into this idea that Snyder was just blowing shit up again, because he wasn't. Every fight scene in this movie served a purpose, unlike a lot in Man of Steel, which were just showing off. For me, Snyder did learn his lesson from the first film, and each action scene here felt like it was earned and had a reason for taking place. The three-stage final showdowns had a hell of emotional undercurrent to them, unlike anything the Marvel movies have really done yet, and I love those films. So, yeah, I can't agree with that, you know, and I respect his opinion. You know, he knows a lot, Carl. He's a good guy. I respect his opinion a lot, but I don't see how he has learnt his lesson.
No, I don't think he's learnt his lesson. I think he's maybe picked up on one or two things that people bitch and moan about, but I don't think he acted upon any of them. I think he's gone in and just gone, well, no, you know, Man of Steel made a fortune. I clearly knew what I was doing. I've been given another film. I've now got Batman versus Superman. More of the same. This, you know, I've done it once, I'll do it again. I don't think he took anything from the complaints made about Man of Steel.
Yeah. No, I know. And I disagree, but you know, everyone's got different opinions on this, and it's why it's so interesting, really. I urge everyone to go and look at the Foul Critics review from Owen Hughes. And check that out, because that's a really good review with some positives about Batfleck, as we call him, which I think they're absolutely right about. Matthew Howell said, nearing a disaster, I think, the more I've thought since seeing it. I do worry that for the extended universe side of it, Marvel took their time giving each character a film before the Avengers, but it looks like DC are doing the opposite with the Justice League films. Worrying. Affleck was the saving grace. He was great, and the IMAX sequences were impressive, but the film was a mess. A big, loud mess. And yeah, I think I do agree with Matt there. And finally, Matt Latham, our friend Matt Latham, again on Facebook said, when asked, is it a triumph or a disaster? He said, neither. He said, plenty of good ideas on a dartboard, but Snyder can't play darts and ends up permanently marking the wall that the dartboard is resting against. But by pure fluke, hits a bullseye with the Batman dart. And I said, that's got to be the most tortured metaphor ever.
But still pretty accurate one, though.
Oh, yeah. he came out with a brilliant response. I've got to read this to you because it's made me laugh. And I said, well, is that really a big... Does that really make sense? And he said, there's a wall of dartboards and Zack Snyder has got darts he's supposed to throw at the Dawn of Justice board. So he's got these really high-quality darts of characters and ideas that he's supposed to hit this dartboard with. So the Superman dart hits nowhere near what it should and instead embeds into the void that is the wall. That mark caused by the Superman dart thrown by Snyder is always going to be there, marking the wall. Repeat with Snyder throwing other darts, Lex, Wonder Woman, spoiler-named character, all hitting the wall and not the dartboard. In fact, his Lex dart probably flew out the window and injured a passerby for how much Lex was awful. The only element that actually hit the board is the Batfleck dart. But quite possibly, Snyder's love of destroying things makes me think he's deliberately marking the wall anyway, thinking it's art, when in fact it just makes him look shit at darts. And by shit at darts, I mean shit at directing.
I love it.
I think he's right. I think that Latham has summed it up there, really. But yeah, I think the people are divided. I think that just goes to show our reactions have been that. And I think that will continue to be the case, really.
We're not going to know, really, for a couple of months. Probably, you know, Blu-ray release.
Yeah.
When Blu-ray comes out and people watch it for a second or third time and actually go, oh, maybe I was wrong. Maybe me being all excited over Batman just no, this is kind of rubbish. Sadly, I'm going to see it again tomorrow. So.
Maybe you'll come out and go, that was amazing. I was so wrong.
Because I snuck off to watch the midnight screening, I had to leave the wife behind, so I'm taking the wife to watch it tomorrow.
That's so fair enough.
Maybe I'll come out of it and say, actually, it wasn't as bad. I doubt it.
Maybe.
I'm almost certain I'm just going to come out of it and go, well, at least I had a comfy chair to nap in.
Or maybe this will be the film you watch 20 times.
Oh, God. That's 2.5 hours. That's far too long. At least there's no post-credit scene for this one.
Yes, to my surprise.
I'm so glad, actually, I follow a couple of Twitter accounts, including Film Clickbait, which before I went to see it reported that, no, there wasn't a post-credit scene. So the second the credits rolled, I was up and out because it was 3 o'clock in the morning and I needed to get home.
You're like, please let this end. Yeah. Please let this be over. And with that, our podcast is over. This has been quite a mammoth edition of Pick a Flick. A big thanks, Andrew, for coming on and talking about the DC verse in all its glory.
Oh, thank you for having me on. It's always always good to come on and chat with you, Tony.
Thank you. It's been great. It's been really good. So are you about out and about on Foul Critics? You had the live episode, didn't you, recently? The 202nd episode of Foul Critics.
Yes, I was on the live episode for that. And actually, I'm recording the Bats vs. Supes episode with Foul Critics tomorrow as well. So I am about with them for a bit, yeah.
You're going to be talked out on this by Tuesday.
I am. Well, this is kind of where it's going to be interesting, because I could go into tomorrow's recording having just seen it for the second time with a completely different attitude. I'm gonna if that happens, I'm gonna look bipolar when both episodes come out.
Yeah, it will be interesting. It will be interesting. Let's see the difference. There's a reason to listen to Foul Critics, guys, if you're not already, which you should be, let's face it. Anywhere else we can find you right now?
No, I just kind of tend to hang around on Twitter at Brooker411, where I just spout garbage about the films and TV I'm watching.
Always good garbage, though. Garbage worth your time. You're also going to be on the XCast very soon, our other podcast. That's coming up in a few weeks. So keep an eye out for Andrew's thoughts on our 10th episode of the XCast. And we'll be back again for another episode very soon. We're back to our regular picked flicks with some guest hosts. I've just popped back for a bit for this one. I'll be off again doing my other things. But you can find us at Pick a Flick Pod on Twitter. And you can find us on Facebook at Pick a Flick. Please, please let us know what you think. Please do subscribe to us on iTunes and, sign up there, because we'll get noticed a bit more, and that's always great. And, give us any feedback. We're part of the Black Hole Media Podcast Network, which is at Black Hole Media on Twitter and Black Hole Media on Facebook. We've got a group now, so you could join the group and be part of all the chatter that goes on there with me and Andrew and loads of other people, which is always fun. So come and get involved. That'd be great. So a final thanks, Andrew, and enjoy Batman and Superman again tomorrow, if that's the right word.
I will certainly try.
Good luck. You have my sympathy. until next time, guys, this has been Pick a Flick, where you pick the film and we talk about it. Simple. See you next time.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.